Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
Welcome back, Football Monday on WGR. Always a pleasure to welcome Eric Wood to our broadcast every Monday afternoon. Eric, as you might, as you surely would guess or know, this one yesterday, Houston 23, Bills 20, has given us a lot to talk about, even sort of battle about, with how the game ended and just how it's possible that Josh Allen could have a 9-for-30 stat line. So I don't know, Eric. I mean, it's early in the season, the Bills are still in first place. It was a close game, but man, there were some definite problems here. How bad are things?
You know, I don't think the sky is falling in Buffalo. And part of the reason is because you look around the division, you have a lot of confidence that, you know, we should be the best team in the AFC East. And, you know, but for me, the way these last 2 weeks have looked has been concerning. You're playing, you know, two better teams when, you know, you look at how the schedule unfolded. Those first three games weren't very difficult opponents. Then your last two, you really struggle, especially on the offensive side of the football. Defense struggled against Baltimore, but that's your undermanned side based upon injuries. And so you expect this offense to be able to carry them more, just being the healthier unit at this point. And they put up 3 points in the first half of the last two games and really have had no flow to the offense. So obviously I'm sure we'll get to it, but the passing game is just right now seems it's a concern. We'll say that. 9-for-30, you mentioned that. 126 total passing yards, only 4 catches by wide receivers in the game yesterday. That's not going to cut it against anybody, especially a team like Houston, who is one of the better teams in the AFC.
So how do we make things better? How do they make things better? I mean, I'm watching clip after clip from yesterday's game, Eric, and, you know, sure, you can pick apart Allen missing a throw here and there. I mean, he's not blameless in all of this, but, man, there's just a lot of guys not open. The way it looks to me, not to just completely absolve Allen of any, you know, of any responsibility for a 9-for-30 day. He certainly missed some throws, but man, they're having a tough time.
They are, and missing Khalil Shakir definitely hurt as well. And when Shakir was out of the lineup, it looked like Houston, who does play a good amount of man defense, is sixth most in the NFL heading into the game, but you know, they copied a lot of what Baltimore did in bringing pressures or simulated pressures where you have 7 guys up at the line of scrimmage. You're not exactly sure who's rushing on the play. And then you play man defense behind it. And, yeah, you give up the long one to Coleman after you miss a tackle. But for the most part, you know, guys can't get open in time. And so until they're able to fix that, that's going to be the MO. That's what teams are going to do to this Bills offense. Don't give them those little swing passes. Don't give them the screens. Make them beat you down the field. And let's make a bet that those guys can't get open in time. If they have five blockers, let's bring six rushers, and let's make a bet that they can't get open in time. And generally, when you have a free defender coming, it's hard for Josh to scramble as well. And so, you know, how do you combat that? You know, maybe rub routes. You know, obviously win outside. But if you're looking at this and saying, okay, we don't necessarily have guys at this point that are true separators, or and I'm just saying, you know, if that's the case, then schematically you got to try and help those guys out more.
Interesting. You know, last week, Eric, after the Baltimore loss, we started to get into conversations about Devontae Adams and Amari Cooper, you know, whether the Bills would be a player. There was a report that the Bills inquired on Adams, at least. And I'm not asking you about cap stuff here, just like the idea of it. And my problem with the idea of it, and we may have talked about this, I'm not sure if we did, but is how contradictory it would seem to be to, like, kind of everything they built and set up. Everybody eats and all of that, having receivers that don't care about stats, etc. I wonder, though, if this game, a second in a row where they're just, I mean, there's one broken pass play and there's almost nothing else all day, makes you think the Bills might be like, well, we tried, it was a nice idea, but these are desperate times. I mean, how close are we to that kind of threshold here where you might think that the Bills would look outside?
I mean, I think they're going to look. I mean, I think these last 2 weeks, you know, we're evident that, you know, especially with Shakir getting dinged up in Baltimore and maybe not being as effective and then missing last game, it's like, okay, well, if he's out of the lineup, who do we rely on to get the ball to in a must-win situation? And so, you know, I think you got to do your homework and see what's available. And look, if the messaging changes and the wins come, who cares?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Right.
It's like, okay, there's been defenses that have had to flip their philosophy. Okay, we got to get a lot more aggressive. You know, that Bills defense last year had to get more creative at times because of a lack of a pass rush with Von Miller not coming back off the ACL and Greg Rousseau injured for a part of the season last year. Okay, well, let's get in some dime looks. Let's get creative about bringing Bernard or, you know, Taron Johnson off the slot. Let's kind of go outside of our normal MO. Now, you know, I don't think there was, you know, social media posts, you know, clamoring that style of defense. So I know exactly what you're saying on the offseason built around this. Everybody eats, and, I think it still can be an effective system. But, man, when you get down multiple scores, if you're not going to play efficient from the start, it becomes really difficult when you put yourself in obvious pass situations. And that's where they found themselves the last 2 weeks.
Eric, as you probably are aware, most of the conversation since this game ended has been about the sequence at the end of the fourth quarter where the Bills were pinned at their own 3-yard line and threw the ball three times, all incomplete, punted back to Houston, and ultimately lost on what was a 59-yard field goal by Fairbairn.
Yes.
What did you think as you're watching that unfold live? I won't lead you at all. It's like, what did you think when they came out throwing there?
Yeah, so, well, I'll start with the punt. So the punt goes down inside the five, and I'm thinking, uh-oh, we're in a world of hurt right here, because if you get a run-heavy set, they're expecting you to just try and waste their timeout. It's probably going to be pretty difficult to run the ball against them. You know, looking back, that's probably the decision. You know, the way it panned out, they call these pass plays. Now, maybe Joe Brady's calling them thinking, hey, if there's not something open past the sticks, maybe we check it down. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But Josh Allen standing in his own end zone, those decisions have to happen quick.
Right.
You know, you get sacked in the end zone, the game's over as well. So he's trying to make very quick decisions out there. Sometimes it's easy to watch the All-22 copy afterwards and say, man, look, Kincaid's open 4 yards down the field. That would have been nice to take and burn one of their timeouts. But it's almost like you either run the ball three times or an obvious completion, or you go for it and get past the sticks. They put the ball in their best player's hands in Josh Allen, and it didn't work out. I mean, it's unfortunate. I see the criticism. You know, I'm not as strong as maybe like a Trey Wingo, who did a rant on X after the game talking about how it was the worst coaching decisions he's ever seen. I mean, you're putting the ball in your best player's hands, and just because they were throwing the ball didn't necessarily mean they're saying, I'm not playing for overtime. They had to try and get a first down to get to overtime because you're punting from back to up. So, obviously, looking back, you'd run the football. I respect the fact that, you know, Sean owned it after the game. He likely has a lot of faith in Joe Brady and let him make the decisions there, and maybe he wishes he would have stepped in that moment.
Recognizing that you, as far as I know, were never the guy with the green dot on the helmet. So communication with the coordinator. Because one question I have here, you know, 24 hours later, thinking back on that sequence, I was okay throwing. I think they, you know, it, to me, I'm not assuming they could have run it and either A, gotten a first down, or B, bled the clock out. I mean, they could have made Houston burn timeouts, but a 60-yard field goal still could have been the end result there after your punting if you can't pick up the first down running. So calling pass plays, like, what is the objective? Like, what do you have any familiarity on how specific instructions could get there? Like, could Brady be telling Allen, like, look, here are the routes. Like, here's the play call. Look for something underneath. We're not trying to go win the game here. We just need a first down, and then we're going to run it out and kick, and maybe there'll be, you know, 6 seconds left or something. I just wonder how specific a coordinator would get with a quarterback in that scenario.
Yeah, that's a great question. So likely before the series, you're having those conversations. You get 20 seconds in the quarterback's helmet. And so assuming it's a fairly simple play call, you could make you could give him a comment or two. But you really have to rush it with, you know, these play calls the way they are. But, you know, likely before the series, you're telling him, hey, if we're going to put the ball in your hands, you can't take a sack here. You really don't want to hold on the ball too long, because if we get a holding in the end zone, it's a safety as well. And so, you know, those are probably things discussed before the series, not necessarily in between plays.
You know, that was a great question.
Thank you.
You know, people say, not Eric necessarily, but, you know, it's the kind of thing where I've asked some terrible questions over the years, and the guests will be like, oh, that's a great question.
It's not even a question. I probably asked Eric more terrible questions than good ones. I'll take the praise when I can get it.
Well, that's always been interesting to me, because you're right. I have never had the green dot on my helmet. And if you guys remember, like, the emergence of Jared Goff with Sean McVay, when everyone gave Sean McVay so much credit for, like, telling him coverages because they're running no-huddle offense and they're at the line of scrimmage, I'm thinking to myself, like, how sharp is Sean McVay? If he's on the sideline, because he's the head coach, he's also calling plays, is he really reading? I think they were giving Sean McVay a little too much credit in those instances, because I'm like, Sean McVay from field level is able to read coverages, give him the play call, and coach him up within 20 seconds. It seemed a little far-fetched. Maybe he was saying, hey, your first read is Cooper Kupp here because he's likely going to be man-to-man against whoever. Or, hey, make Cooper Kupp the first read. Okay, that's fairly simple. But if they were giving him credit for maybe reading the coverages for him, outside of maybe a couple times a game, I found that kind of far-fetched.
Goff has kind of redeemed himself in the end, I think, with Detroit. I'll just want to say to you, Eric, my take on that sequence at the end is, my problem is with second down. I mean, I'm fine throwing the ball. I do the same thing. You got to trust Allen, you know, almost in every situation. So they barely missed on first down, fine. The clip on second down, though, he's got multiple open options underneath, and whether he gets the message from Brady or not, I want him to know that. And instead, it's 50 air yards or prayer yards to Mac Hollins. Like, now you're in tough. Now you need third down, or else you're facing what you got. And I blame the quarterback on that play. I think he's experienced enough where he shouldn't need to be told what we're going for here. And I wonder too, Eric, if this isn't going too far. This was the kind of outcome yesterday where it sort of hit me that I never see Allen and McDermott talking to each other. And whether it's because McDermott is just sort of only on the defensive side or whatever it is, doesn't have to be a problem. But I wonder if you might have a thought on that.
No, I didn't like the second down decision either. And, man, I mean, you're putting putting myself in Josh's shoes. He's so competitive. He's so confident. He gets one-on-one coverage. It's Matt Collins who hasn't made a play downfield for the Bills. I mean, he caught the one touchdown against Arizona, but that was cover zero. He catches a short route in the end zone, takes it in for a touchdown. Outside of that, he hasn't made a play down the field one time. Man, if that's a PI or if he can come down with that ball,
you win.
Like, exactly.
You're in business.
And
yeah.
I know what Josh is thinking, and it's not the right decision, but you know what I mean?
Like, yep.
And I know I'm justifying a decision for him, but like in that split second, I know he wants it back, but in that split second, he's like, maybe this is the time that Mac comes down with one. Maybe Mac puts his left foot in the ground, goes back through the DB who has his back turned, and that's a PI 9 out of 10 times in the NFL.
Yeah, good point.
You know what I mean? You get the guy in trail position with no safety help, you get a lot of PIs in those situations, but they didn't connect, and obviously that sequence is hopefully it's not haunting them come January.
Good point. That is often, if not almost always, Allen's instinct in that, say, if you will, 50-50 kind of consideration. What am I going to do? I'm going for it. And I think we like that about him. Eric, do you have anything to add to the conversation about his injury and whether you saw something on the sideline about, to whatever extent he was examined? It did seem dubious, that head injury cleared in like a minute. I don't know. I'm not naive to like, I think maybe sometimes the rules are different for different guys, or if Allen just sort of forced his way back on. I don't know. I wasn't there, and the cameras aren't spending too much time on that.
So the cameras weren't spending a lot of time on it, but our box was opposite, pretty much straight across from the blue injury tent. So Josh immediately goes into the injury tent, and now here comes one of the Bills team doctors and then the red hat. So the independent neurologist goes in there. They spent some time in there. Then the independent neurologist and the doctor come out. It looked like they went over to maybe a monitor to review the play as well, which to me was probably Josh just passed the cognitive test, whatever that – I'd never done that in my career. He had passed the cognitive test in the injury tent. And so, okay, now let's just make sure that there's nothing obvious, a Tua hand cringe, whatever it may be. And so they ended up clearing him. And I was telling my wife today, it was like a WWE scene because all the Bills fans were pretty much behind the Bills bench. And here comes Josh bursting out of the injury tent, goes and grabs his helmet, and it's just this roar in the stadium. To me, it almost looked more like a pro wrestling scene than it did a football game with him coming out of that tent. But, I hope he's all right. I mean, at first I was like, ooh, is that shoulder? It could be his head. But, he took some shots again yesterday.
And today, Sean McDermott said he is not in the concussion protocol. He was evaluated, like you're saying, and then cleared to return. So I guess officially, anyway, that's the end of it. So
yeah, and at first he was kicking his feet. And so, like, a lot of times, like, if you get a concussion, you're not, like, moving around a bunch. He was, like, kicking his legs like he was in pain. So, to me, it looked like he fell on his, like, right side, and maybe that was what had gone down.
Do you have any thoughts on how Curtis Samuel is going so far? Maybe the biggest surprise, I think, of all the struggles their passing game has had the last couple of weeks after, really getting everything they really needed out of the first 3 weeks of the season with the 3-0 record, is just that Samuel, especially with Shakir out, was not... is featured too strong? I mean, I respect everybody eats and the effort they're making here, but man, Samuel, I thought the runway was cleared for takeoff for him yesterday, and again, one catch for 0 yards.
Yeah, that's probably been the most disappointing part of the offense for me this year, is the fact that he's got this speed, but he's not a downfield threat, which... I remember prepping for the Commanders game with the Bills last year, and you were saying, okay, well, make sure Samuel doesn't take the top off the defense. And now we've pretty much given him everything behind the line of scrimmage, and whether he's not getting open at the second level or it just it seems like his role is been the hardest for them to establish within this offense for a guy that they, you know, gave a pretty nice contract to, had a lot of confidence in, and he's also played under Joe Brady before. It's not like you gave him a player and said, hey, try and fit him in. He was productive in Carolina when Joe Brady had him the last time. And so, to me, that's honestly been one of the most disappointing things about this offense, because I felt like he would have been one of the guys to eat in this system. And he's not doing anything right now, and that's not necessarily even a critique on him. Like, how do we maximize his skill set to get him going? Because speed, experience, playmaking ability in the past, seeing it done during an NFL game, like, that's all there. Okay, how do we get this dude going outside of, like, throwing him these swing passes and screens, which now teams are playing so tight to the line of scrimmage in those situations. Like, those are going to get difficult to even pull off until we start stretching them down the field.
Quick thought on the Jets, Eric. The Sunday morning game yesterday, and, of course, the Bills' next opponent a week from tonight. In certain ways that are similar to what we've been talking about, they look like they have their own problems.
They definitely do. And, you know, they just don't look sharp when I watch them. And I don't know if that's, you know, I don't know. That's having a quarterback that wasn't around for some of this offseason. I don't know exactly what's going on over there. They have a lot of talent again this year. And then obviously they make a move for Hassan Riddick, and he's not playing, who would be a really nice edge piece for them on their defense. But I don't know. To me, they just, yeah, there's a lot going on over there as well. And so both these teams are coming in. You know, I've read some stuff with the Jets this week, and their messaging as well is, hey, win this game, we're first place in the AFC East, we're back to 3-3. The Bills are, hey, let's get this one this week, we're first place in the AFC, we're 4-2. So you got two hungry teams coming in for Monday night.
Go figure. Rodgers looks like a 40-year-old. Like what you'd expect a 40-year-old might look like. You know, I've always thought for quite a few years, I would say, I think Tom Brady set an unrealistic standard for expectation for a 40-year-old quarterback. You know, he just managed to make it work. And Rodgers, he had a game earlier this year against New England that he moved around really well. And I was kind of like, oh, okay, maybe I was wrong and a little harsh here.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games and a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy daybeds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
You sit in traffic now, but later, there's an ice cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, all your patience is paid out in gold. You remain calm through honks, bumper to bumper, and people yelling.
Come on, move!
You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex Grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex Grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
But, man, the last couple of weeks, he looks every second of 40 years old.
Yeah, and you're talking about Tom Brady, who ate, slept, and breathed football, workout, nutrition. And, you know, you got a guy in Aaron Rodgers who's got interest outside of football. You know what I mean? Like, that's...
Mm-hmm.
That's
nice that way thing. To say it.
So, yeah. And so, yeah. So, Tom, and that's not an indictment on Aaron. Most guys in the NFL do. Tom Brady he was a robot for probably the last 14 years of his career so that he could perform in his early 40s like he did.
So you're telling me you don't think Brady like went up to mountaintops to eat hallucinogenics during the offseason? Probably. This is a hypothetical.
Not unless it was like some type of like organic retreat with some type of like, you know, special training deal that, you know, he's going to strengthen his core in a new way to elevate his game.
Right.
After the second pick yesterday, my friend Pat Daugherty had a funny tweet. He said, Aaron Rodgers is not leaving Europe.
He's going to stay.
Reportedly, he has, but, you know, it's seemed possible. Okay. Thanks, Eric. We will talk to you again on the pregame show in a week.
Yep. Sounds so good. Looking forward to it, guys.
All right. There you go. That's our man, Eric Wood, on the West Her Hotline. His weekly appearances with us here on WGR are brought to you by Northwest Bank for what's next. Get started at northwest.com and by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown.
We'll look for your calls again next. Football Monday, Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here, 803-0550. This is WGR.
My number one thought watching the Jets offense this morning was, that is not a unit that's a Davante Adams away from salvation. I watch Buffalo, I'm like, yeah, you drop Davante Adams on here, we might be cooking. Like, everybody goes down a peg. We get some players like that he can't get open. We drop Davante Adams in here, but obviously it sounds like he just wants to play with quarterbacks that he's played with before.
Wonder what Josh Allen thinks of the idea, Davante Adams. Allen, I want to just say it because it's on my mind, but I don't want it to sound like a big scandal or necessarily a big deal, but from time to time, I've taken my shots, you know, just to be me. Like, I'd rather he not draft the players. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But there might be some truth in it. Like, we had Brandon Bean say that at the draft, Allen had texted him the name, Dalton Kincaid, right? This year, there was that with Coleman, too. Like, he was Allen approved. And that can mean nothing. That can be just sort of, you want, I'm sure the first guy to call in about if they were offended by this take would be like, well, wouldn't you want your quarterback? It's the most important guy, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah,
I think there are metrics, there are ways of analyzing these guys that might run counter to, you know, jump ball contested catch guy. Or like MVS was another one that Allen wanted, you know, during the offseason. And I went to Sneaky Joe this morning. Like, what do you think about this point? Is it a good point? Is it worth, like, even thinking about? And he didn't say yes or no, but he brought up Knox. Like, does Knox get the contract if
because
he's that sort of
because
tight?
They're good friends, yeah.
Yeah, like.
Yeah. I think I want to say it this way. I think mostly for my own sanity, I take any – it came up on the telecast yesterday at one point. Charles Davis, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, oh, he saw – at the touchdown. So the Coleman touchdown. He saw this guy on tape, loved him, wanted him. I don't remember it quite that way. I remember after the draft, like you're saying, we hear like Bean will like slip in like, oh, yeah, no, Josh, he loves him. I feel like that's just – that's the best guy on our board talk. You know what I mean? Like, we did this. Of course, what is Allen going to do? Is he going to publicly question the choice they made? Like, I don't know. We're never going to hear that they drafted a guy he didn't want. Like, that's never going to happen. So you often say, think about what it would sound like if we heard the opposite of what we're being told. I just feel like it's just a thing to make us all like nod and go, okay, yeah, they're respecting Allen. I don't know how real it is. And again, my lead here is it's for my own sanity. Because like if in reality Brandon Bean wanted to draft Xavier Worthy but decided instead to trade the pick to Kansas City because Josh Allen wanted Keon Coleman, I'd be standing on a ledge somewhere. I wouldn't want to live like that.
Yeah, okay. We could talk about it some other time, maybe. I don't know. Like, I'll add quickly, the Kincaid thing happened last year, and then this year, I think it was Bean, or even Allen, or both, when they alluded, one or both alluded to the same thing happening with Coleman, and then instinctively thought to sort of bring it back.
Hmm.
I'm not sure right now if it was Bean or Allen who was doing that particular talking, but I remember that happened this time because, you know, you don't want that to be the takeaway, that it's Allen making the call. And I don't mean that as disrespect to Bean. I just think, like, he has an important voice. He should.
Mm-hmm.
But there are
boundaries to that. There should
yes,
be.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
And that's enough for now. Let's go to the phones. 803-0550. Vince is next. Hi, Vince.
Hey, guys, how you doing?
Good, Vince. Thank you.
Good. Hey, a quick comment and a question. I've been listening all day, and guys have been talking about the end of the game and whether to be conservative and whether to be aggressive. And I kind of look at, let's see how the game went. You know, so I'm thinking, if Josh is having a Jacksonville day, be aggressive. If he's having a day like he had yesterday, you're not playing to your strength at a crucial time of the game.
I think that's entirely fair. The biggest question I have 24 hours later is whether or not their objectives were in line. And by they, I mean the coordinator / head coach and the quarterback. Because Allen threw passes like he was trying to get them into field goal range, which, you know, it's not without merit, but they might have really, the way McDermott sounded after the game, and now that's in retrospect, and he knows he's about to get clobbered for it, but still, like, really what you needed there is a first down. So the best way to get a first down is what you needed to do. And I respect them thinking passing was the way, but not prayers to Mac Hollins, you know, like someone in the middle, like the third down play to Samuel, but you just got to get the ball there, because that was there.
Totally agree.
I think in Houston, in that situation, what would they – sure, they'd like to get the 2 points, right? Have Will Anderson or Danielle Hunter beat someone so badly that Brown or Dawkins holds them in the end zone. Safety, thank you for coming, game over. You know, next on the list is get them to punt and get us the ball back. So, sure, if you're them, you don't want to get beat over the top. You're probably expecting the run, so you're up close. Shouldn't that mean the 10 to 15 yard area in the middle of the field would be pretty available to you?
I just want to say again, thank you, Vince. Vince's way of putting this was, you know, comparing Allen having better days to yesterday, basically play to your strength. And can somebody tell me what that is then? What is the Bills' strength if it's not Allen with the ball? Like, it's kind of almost comical to me to think that we're at this point. It wasn't even 2 weeks ago that MVP chants were almost deafening at the stadium. I'm in the crowd, like, this is the game I'm at. MVP, he's the betting favorite. And as well, he was having a day where I guess I'm better off handing the ball to Cook at my own 3 yard line. What? You can like the run, but that's the take? It's there 2 weeks later. I don't know if I care if he was over 27 yesterday. Mm-hmm. I still think he needs to be the guy who's going to decide this. And if he wants to throw it deep, hoping for a flag or a miracle catch, that's kind of how we're used to living with him. That's his instinct. And he missed on third down, and here we are. It still didn't have to result in a loss. You brought up win probability. What even is it at fourth down? Like, it's a good punt return. You could talk about punting the ball out of bounds or something, or, I don't know, doing something different. I don't know what that would be. And then the next play happens as well. There's still other stuff that has to go Houston's way.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't have wanted to punt out of bounds because I'm going to want them to burn, just like the Kansas City 13 situation, seconds. 13 seconds. I want you to spend however many seconds. It's very precious. There's not a lot of them left. Please burn a few trying to get yards on a punt return or a kick return. So I would rule out kicking it out of bounds, but it's something you could have considered, I suppose.
Yes. I don't know that I want that either. I just think that's a part of the situation that we haven't really even talked about. Rich is next. Hi, Rich.
Hi, boys. One thing I want to say. I've always been a McDermott, I guess, supporter. Yesterday really made me a turn on that. I loved the everybody must eat, you never know where it's coming from type thing. But looking back, every winning team has always had that one player that has gone above and beyond the other, quote-unquote, everybody's. Always. I mean, Travis Kelce. I mean, he was always that step ahead of everyone else, even though everyone was involved for Kansas City. San Francisco. I mean, they've just looking back, everyone has had that. Even the, going back to the Baltimore days or whatever, it was just always that one, standout player. So, I mean, as much as I've loved it over the last, couple weeks, the last 2 weeks have just shown that you need that one standout player, and Josh Allen can't only be it. I don't even know what to – and Curtis Samuel at this point, he just seems like – and we know he's talented, but he seems like the biggest waste of money that I've ever seen. I've never seen a player try to receive the ball behind the line of scrimmage as much as he has, with the speed that he has and the possibility of getting open that he has.
That might not be on him, right? Thanks, Rich. I mean, how they're using him is not necessarily going to be optimal. I mean, it's really amounting to nothing, so it at least should be experimented with at this point, Samuel. Thanks for the call. We have Andrew next. Hi, Andrew.
Hey, guys. I just want to make two quick points. I mean, the first one is I didn't really even care whether it was run or pass, but I don't even think it was about the first down. I think it was just getting like 5, 6, 7 yards to give Sam Martin some room to get a proper punt off. And then the second point I had was, on the defense, we've done like a really good job of developing talent, in that when big names go down, there's always like next man up. And look at, there's multiple cases where those guys have delivered, like Terrell Bernard and Ingram and Cam Lewis in spots. It's just, why don't we have that same kind of cadence on the offensive side of the ball?
That's an interesting question. It might take a long time to really think about and analyze that. I'm not sure. Just right away, if that's right, you're certainly right. I think I'd say the same thing about their defensive guys, how that's happened. A lot of it is based on assumptions from draft pedigree. So because a guy wasn't drafted earlier, I mean, Davis wasn't drafted. He was a Saturday pick, and he did fine in his career, so you can count him if you want. But you're talking about a high pick in Kincaid, another one in Coleman. Samuel's an established player in the league. Shakir has done well for a day three pick.
With that in mind, I'll just squeeze this in now because I don't know how in the mood people are to hear it. I thought Dwayne Carter, who I only mentioned in a negative context off of the Baltimore game for celebrating a play that he made, it was a good play in the Baltimore game, but the score didn't warrant being really excited, stomping around in the backfield like, look what I just did, because you're kind of getting your ass kicked. So that bugged me, and I pointed that out last week. I thought he had a tremendous game. I haven't seen Pro Football Focus grades, but he just, I, he flashed a lot yesterday, and that was his first opportunity. He started the game because Oliver is out. So they talk about next man up. They may have uncovered a guy that they can use more than they have been, because Oliver has been, to my recollection anyway, playing just somewhat above the percentage of snaps that he has in years past, because I think they haven't really maybe trusted what they've got behind him. Dwayne Carter looked like a player who's in line for more of a timeshare there.
Mike Schopen, the Bulldog Football Monday continues right after this break here on WGR. Let's go. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog here. Thanks for listening. Next up is Ryan. Hi, Ryan.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good, man.
Listen, huge Bills fan. I absolutely love the team. All I want is them to win one Super Bowl before my dad, you know, passes away one day, since he's the one that got me on Bills Mafia. And it's just gut-wrenching week after week when these bad things happen to us. But there's one common theme. Look, Josh Allen has not looked right since Brian Daboll left. It's just a fact. Looked right in the sense of being a passer. He's a playmaking quarterback who's honestly better at running and making crazy throws than it is making the easy throws. Yesterday, how do you go 9 for 30? And essentially what he should have had was 90 yards if you take away the, you know, Keon Coleman miss, right? That was like a 10-yard pass. If that was a, you know, a straight up play. 9 for 30 with 90 yards. I saw one play to Matt Collins that was a drag route that went for like 20 yards. You can't tell me that we could have done easy stuff like that. I'm listening all day hearing about get Curtis Samuel involved, get these other guys involved. I understand the receivers aren't great, but these are NFL caliber wideouts. You cannot tell me that it is so hard to just do, you know, a 10-yard curl, a little drag route, and that's the problem. The coaching is not there with Josh. Josh Allen is a guy who is a great athlete. He is a great player, but he needs a guy like Daboll in his ear. As soon as Daboll went to the Giants, that game against the Titans, where Daniel Jones threw a pick and Brian Daboll's in his face, that's what Josh Allen needs. He's not mentally strong enough and good at processing to say, Josh, you're running the show. He needs a coach that has a system that says, Josh, you're throwing it to your 5-yard under on this play. Josh, the next is a 20-yard post. Clearly, that's Brian Daboll's style. Ever since then, Ken Dorsey, Joe Brady, you know, Josh is the reins. This is Josh Allen's team. That does not work with Josh Allen.
All right. You made your point. Thanks, Ryan. Anything? You're not getting Daboll back
No.
Ever.
No. And yeah, I don't know. I feel like there has been evidence, even this year, of him being the player the caller's claiming he can't be.
2 weeks ago.
Right. So, like, quick, precision, on time. Like, that was the word I used after, well, in addition to they demolished Jacksonville. It was like, precision, surgical. That's what that was. So, I don't know. I don't know that he's incapable of it. It's not going well. And, you know, I've got a smattering of plays from yesterday's game where he's just running to his right because nobody's open. And he's buying time, hoping somebody can do what Shakir did last week in Baltimore, which is get free down the field. He can chuck it to him before he gets out of bounds or gets his head caved in. That's what it looks like to me. So, I mean, I'm not against him being criticized. I think it's warranted. Maybe even the last series, especially, like, the choices he made there are questionable.
Yep.
It does sort of play into what the caller is saying. So I don't know if he needs to be more guided by the hand in a situation like that, just like against Kansas City last year in the playoffs. Maybe somebody's got to step in and do that. But, you know, we don't know what's happening communication-wise, like what his marching orders are, other than just go execute this play.
Does someone else give the orders then? We're saying that, right? I guess that's how it should work. Yeah, I don't know. It could get really complicated if there's strife, might not be the right word, but
I do think it's interesting how different. I'm just seeing quotes from Brady. It's his day to talk today. How different the tone of what I'm reading. I've not heard the comments, but I mean, they read very contrary to how McDermott sounds about the last series. Like, McDermott's apologetic, basically.
My fault.
What I'm reading from Brady is, we made choices. I'm not gonna second guess.
It's just like, Brady is tough for me to listen to and read because he's kind of all over the place. He said that they're in lockstep communication, So let's rule that out, according to Brady. Mm-hmm. But then second guess, he wouldn't be the person to second guess. He's the play caller, you know? Like, it's just it's the wrong way to put it. Communication's perfect. Didn't work out. That's how Allen talks, too. Everything's fine. Didn't work out. You guys are going to run with it. Not exactly much insight. I did the same kind of thing, by the way, as Ryan with the stats. The plays happen. A lot of yards happen in the NFL, run after the catch. That's a good thing. But take away that play, Coleman, yesterday, and Shakir, the busted play against the Ravens. Just eliminate those two plays. What you've got in two games combined is 23 completions for 180 yards. That is not – like, that's Bryce Young. I mean, that is the absolute pits for your offense. And you lost both games, you know. It's not like the Miami game where you didn't need to be out there.
Right.
So I know it's not entirely fair to take plays out, but it's two sort of lucky – the one Baltimore plays a great play by Allen, but it's broken. It's not scheming up your guys.
Right.
Whether – like, I'm with Ryan, NFL players – get them open. I mean, that shouldn't be so hard, no matter what we want to say about separation skills.
I don't know if this is really needed here. It might even qualify as piling on, but two other significant gains from the Baltimore game were just back shoulder throws to Coleman. Like, they weren't like schemed open,
right?
Easy button throw. I mean, it's an easy button in that, you know, Coleman can make that play, but like that's my offense.
It is. It seems. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog. Football Monday continues next here on WGR.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy day beds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
Getting help for mental health shouldn't be as hard as it is. Mindful Therapy Group is here to make your mental health journey as painless as possible. Mindful partners with thousands of licensed clinicians to find the perfect fit for you, and also accepts insurance. Visit mindfultherapygroup.com.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.